growing, and you know I'm going to need a lateral person. I'm going to need a second person to come along and help me do this job. So understanding what you have authority over is really key to being able to start the process of pouring into somebody else. And the second thing is being willing to hand off things that you have authority over. So understand what you have authority over so that you know what you can give authority, or what authority you can give to other people. Right, this is an interesting idea, because one of the things about serving, and we'll talk more about this in a second, but one of the things about serving is when you get into it, like you're doing your thing, you're in your lane, you're doing what the task requires. If you're a director, man, you're managing everything, you're meeting with your leaders, you're trying to keep the structure of this group together. If you're over on the discipleship side, or if you're over on the teaching side, then you're kind of in your lane doing the things that you're supposed to do to keep things running. And what it can be very easy to do is lose sight of who's coming up beneath me, so that if I need to step out, or if we need to create a new Life Bible study because ours is getting too big, who's going to take on that role? And so this is an idea. This is not my term. This is Kara Powell's term. She is one of the researchers at the Fuller Youth Institute. She came out with a new book called Growing Young, and it profiles churches that are doing a really good job of reaching young adults. So this isn't just a young adult principle, but it was one of the best principles in that book about reaching young adults, is that churches that are effective in creating leaders are churches whose leaders know what they can give away. They know what keys are on their keychain, and they start giving those keys away wisely. They look at people and they say, what could you be doing, and what do I have authority over here? Here's something you could be doing. I just want you to start doing it. I just want you to start doing it. Even if you don't feel like you're ready for it, I'm just going to give you this key. I want you to start doing it. Right? And so this is one of those ways that you begin the process of targeting other people and saying, what is it within my power to give to you to do? That it's not I'm giving my whole job away. It's not I'm giving you a job that I really don't have the authority to give you. It's here's an aspect of what I'm doing, and I want you to eventually be able to do what I'm doing. So here's a part of what I'm doing. Start doing it. That's the idea of keychain leadership. It's wisely handing off the keys to people that you want to start investing in. So this has to be the first thing. The problem that I encounter most of the time in leadership development is that you do something like this, and you say, we're going to invite all the people who want to be leaders, who think they might want to be in leadership one day. And you throw a big leadership council or a big leadership party, and some people come, and what you're relying on is other people to step up and say, I want to be a leader. Will you please teach me how to be a leader? That may have worked in previous generations. I'm going to tell you, it does not work with young adults. It does not work most of the time in the current church environment. People don't just step up and say, you know what, I've really been praying about it, I've really been thinking about it, God wants me to lead, I'm going to lead. Sometimes it happens. It is not the main way that leadership begins. Leadership begins when a leader sees somebody come into the room and say, you know what, these chairs aren't straight, I'm going to straighten these chairs. And a leader says, hey, I have some other things you can do if that's something that you want to do. I'm going to target you, I'm going to look at what you're doing and what your interests are, and I'm going to start giving you things that are on my plate that fall into that area, just so that you can start working. So the idea of throwing out the net and saying, "We'll come if you're interested, we'll get you a few people, but if you want to be effective and efficient at training leaders, it is your job as leaders to look out there and say, hey, I saw that you were doing something. I wonder, could I give you a responsibility to do every week? Could I give you something you could do every week? Would you do that for me?" And when you do that, especially with young adults, that is empowering them to take leadership that they didn't know they were allowed to have, or that maybe they were afraid to have and afraid to ask about. But when you look at it and you say, I see you're doing this, and I want to give you more, I want to give you some real responsibility that has an expectation with it, that raises the bar, and most of the time people will rise to meet it. So that's keychain leadership. You have to initiate the act of giving authority. Don't wait to be asked. That it just doesn't happen fast enough. If your church is growing, it does not happen fast enough that people will ask to be in leadership. If you want to grow and thrive at the rate that I think y'all's church is growing and thriving, you're going to have to be the initiators. That is just going to have to be part of your job as leaders to look out and say, not only am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing, am I meeting the expectations every week, but who else could be helping me meet these expectations so that I can start generating new leadership? Look at who exhibits the kind of character you want and the fundamentals of the ability you want. These are the two things you need to look for. People with character. If they don't have character, then maybe a mentoring relationship is a little bit better for them right now. Because if they don't have the character, then they're not going to follow through. But if they have the character and you see they exhibit just some fundamentals, they don't have to be perfect. They don't have to be experts. But if they have the fundamentals of what you can give them authority to do, then start right there. And just say, hey, I see you're doing this. Can I invite you into my leadership role? And I would like to see you do this every day or every week. Just put the forms on the table. Be at the door and greet. I just want you to smile and shake people's hands when they walk in the door. Can you do that for me 3 weeks out of the month? And then, as they get better at that, you can say, hey, you're doing really awesome at that. Can I also ask you to do this? That's also part of your job, right? And we'll tag team on that. I'll do it 1 week, you do it 1 week. And then eventually, if you keep doing that, you're going to have somebody who can do everything that you can do, everything that your job requires, and you're going to have a peer that can either go to another group and be that person for that group, or help you as your group grows, or help you when your group needs to multiply because it's getting too big. And then, this is the most important part, if you're going to do this, you have to be a leader and not a micromanager. Nothing kills incentive like having somebody breathing down your neck all the time telling you, oh, that's not how I would have done it. That was great, but just, you know, if you're going to hand something off to somebody, hand it off to them. Let them experience what it's like to do it without somebody coming in and fixing it all the time. This is a marriage principle too, right? If you're married or if you hope to be married one day, especially when it comes to like household chores, right? If the guy loads the dishwasher different than the girl, well, let me tell it this way. When my dad and mom got married, my mom, she peels potatoes with a knife, which means that she loses about a quarter of the potato in the process because it's straight line cuts. And so this nice round potato is now more sort of a tube. And my dad, who is an engineer, was watching her do this early on in their marriage. And he just one time said, hey, you want me to show you a better way to do that? And promptly got a potato in the face. And he was just glad it wasn't the knife. So that will happen. If you sit there and somebody's putting out forms, and instead of doing it this way, they do it this way, and you go, well, let me just like that. That's the way you're supposed to do it. Guess who's not going to be there next week to do that again? Right? You're going to get a potato in the face, and that's going to be the end of your little experiment. Be a leader, not a micromanager. Override what you need to, not what makes you comfortable. If they're doing it slightly different than you would have done it, but it still is good, like the excellence level is still there, they're just doing it a little different than you would, let them do it a little different. Don't come in and say, hey, that was a great job, and you know, the result was excellent, but the process is really important, and you need to be doing it this way, this way, this way, and this way. No, I mean, if you arrive at the same location by different paths, that's okay. So when you take on this challenge of targeting people, handing off authority to them, saying, I'm gonna bring you into my position, I want to train you eventually to be able to do what I'm doing, so that if I move up in the leadership chain or if we need to multiply our class, then you could do this. And then you come in here and you say, but you have to look exactly like me when you do it. That's not going to go the way that you want it to go. Allow people to lead and experiment as long as they're not messing it up, right? You override when you need to. If they're doing it wrong, if the end result is off, then there's some correction that needs to happen. But if the end result is the same, then Don't let it bother you that they're getting there by a slightly different path than you would have. All right, so that's the basic idea, giving permission to serve. Looking at other people and saying, how can I help you learn to do what I'm doing because I see potential in you. And I think you could do this. I think you would be good at this. And I'll give you an example. My ministry right now, I'm drawing on about 30 people. It's been about 6 months, done a lot of outreach, trying to overcome kind of a bad reputation that the young adult group has had at our campus in particular. And we're really starting to get going. And there was one guy who one of the girls in our class saw in our 2,000-seat auditorium. He sat in the balcony, in the back, like dead center in one of our sections. And she said, hey, that guy belongs in our class. And I said, you're right, he does. And she said, well, I'm not comfortable going up and inviting a guy to class, so will you do it? So I went up there, and I invited him, and he was genuinely shocked that anybody was talking to him, because he usually sat there in order not to be talked to. Well, he came. He came Sunday, and then he came to our Tuesday night Bible study, and then he came to our Saturday night event, and then he was there again the next Sunday. And I began to realize maybe this is a guy that can be part of the leadership that I'm trying to build as my group is growing. This is a guy who, once I got to know him, I found out that he used to smoke pot every day. He used to sleep around with his girlfriends. He finished high school barely, and then dropped out of the idea of going to college and was working as a grocery stacker in the local grocery store. And at some point, there was an event in his life where he said, this isn't the way that I need to go. And it was only a couple of months before that he had made that decision, and then I encountered him. That guy does anything that I ask him to do. He has no idea what he's doing. He just knows, I want to do something. He would never have come to me. He sat in the back of the balcony by himself, intentionally trying to be ignored. And I just didn't let him be ignored. And now I'm training him in evangelism. He's helped me do salvation counseling. He's helped me do baptism counseling. He walked a guy through the baptism process. He's one of my greeters at my door. I'm just training him to do everything. And this was a guy that would never have come to our small group if I hadn't gone up to him and said, hey, come. And then when I saw that he was kind of gung-ho about it, I said, hey, can you do this for me? And he did it. And I said, hey, you did that really well. Can you do this for me now? And he did it. And now he can do pretty much anything in my class except teach, which we're working on this year. I'm working with him to learn how to teach. Because eventually I'm going to need another teacher, because we're going to grow and I'm going to need somebody to lead another small group for me. That is one of the coolest examples that I know, because he started coming when my group was 8 or 9 people. Not a huge group, didn't have a large trough to draw from, but I just saw that this guy was really eager, that he wanted to grow as a Christian and he wanted to grow as a leader. And so I targeted him, and it's worked out really well. Now, he's got some quirks that I'm not necessarily, like, that's not how I would do it. But hey, you're reaching people. You're helping people. The class is growing. You're not doing anything sinful. That's fine. You do it your way, I'll do it my way, and somehow we'll reach the different people that our personalities reach. So that's how I've learned. If you do it that way, not only do you get good leaders, you get friendly leaders, right? Leaders who like you and aren't going to turn around and gossip about you or stab you in the back or anything like that. So give permission to serve. And then invest in a few people regularly. So this is kind of carrying over that idea of what I'm doing with that guy. Leadership development is a specific aspect of the discipleship process. Leadership development is not something that you do once a year at Midnight Madness. Leadership development is not something you do once a month by having lunch and a meeting with your leaders and saying, what's our calendar, what's our jobs, what's our upcoming events, are we clear on everything? Leadership development is an ongoing process and a relationship that you have with somebody that you're developing, just like disciple making is an ongoing process and a relationship that you have with somebody that you're developing to be more like Christ. The best leaders come from close relationships where they get to see you do what you're doing, then they get to do it under your observation, and then you set them free to do it on their own, and then they go and they do the same thing for somebody else. That the discipleship model works really well for leadership development. And by the way, it's the biblical model. When you look at raising leaders in Scripture, Joshua followed Moses 40 years in the wilderness and was there for everything that Moses was doing. Joshua didn't get to go all the way up the mountain, but he was one of the only people that got to go part of the way up the mountain. And when the Israelites sinned and made the golden calf, who was halfway down the mountain and met Moses? It was Joshua. Joshua sat there and said, "Hey, I don't know what's going down there. It sounds like singing and dancing down there." And he was with Moses when Moses had to deal with that situation. So when, at the beginning of the book of Joshua, Moses dies and God hands the mantle to Joshua, he says, "I'm going to do for you what I did for my servant Moses. You were there, you saw it, you experienced it. Now it's your turn to go do that." Same thing with Elijah and Elisha. Elijah doesn't just go up to Elisha and say, "Boom, here's my mantle, go have a good time, I've got a fiery chariot to catch." He gets Elisha and says, "Follow me. Follow me and do what I'm doing. Experience what I'm experiencing. And then when the transition time comes, you're ready." Same thing happens with Jesus and the 12 apostles. Same thing happens with Paul, with Timothy and Titus, right? They experienced his leadership style and went along with him, both with Jesus and the apostles and with Timothy and Titus with Paul. They went along with their leaders, experiencing and learning. And then when it came time that the mantle got passed to them, when Paul wrote Timothy and said, "You're going to now lead the church at Ephesus. I don't care that they think you're too young. I don't care that people look at you as a youth. Set the example just as I set the example for you." That's leadership development. And if you do it that way, then not only are you able to pour more of yourself into people, they're more likely to get it and carry it on and do the same thing. Investment, it's not just coffee meetings, right? Allow people to shadow you, substitute for you, and experience leadership with you. And this can be really hard, especially if you love doing what you're doing, and especially if people tell you you're good at what you're doing. It's really hard when people are saying, "Man, you're the best teacher I've ever had. I come to this Life Bible study because of your teaching." It can be really hard in that moment to say, "That's great. This guy's teaching next week, because I'm teaching him how to teach," right? So in some sense, you have to be willing to let people substitute for you. You have to be willing to let them shadow you. So just as some examples, spend a week watching somebody else teach, right? Say, "Hey, you've been watching me teach, and we've been working on this. It's your turn, and we're just going to see how it goes." When I was at First Baptist Dallas, I had a college intern who was a Dallas Theological Seminary student. I had already finished seminary, so I was a little bit farther along than him, had more experience than him, but he really wanted to learn how to teach. So I gave him my college ministry and said, "Teach it." And then to follow up, I said, "I want you to record your messages, and I'm going to listen to them, and I'm going to grade them every week." Right? I was teaching another class while he was teaching college, but I got the recording of it, and I would sit in my office, I would listen, I would take notes, I would say, "This was a good point, this was a good point. I think you could have said this better here. I don't know that you necessarily explained this well enough here." I would give notes, and then I would give him a grade on it. And it was F, A through F. And I said, "By the way, when I walk off of the stage with my small group and I reflect on my own lesson, I would rarely give myself more than a B. Because an A means I don't know how I could have done any better. I almost always walk off the stage thinking about the things I could have done better in the lesson. So I want you, as I listen to you, to understand I'm not going to give you an A just because I want you to feel good about yourself. I want to push you. I want you to see where, as an audience member, I would have thought this could have been better. As somebody who knows what you're talking about, as somebody who's already been through seminary and knows the theological ideas you're talking about, here's how I think you could have been clearer to somebody who has no idea what you're talking about. I know you know what you're talking about, but to somebody who has no idea what these theological words mean, if I get up here and I talk about the hypostatic union of the Trinitarian aspects of Christ, then most of the people in my group have just checked out, right? If I talk about that in the late session, everyone's going to sleep. So spend a week watching someone else teach. Allow someone to be part of a counseling session with you. If you have to counsel with somebody, ask that person, "Hey, do you mind? I've got a guy that I'm training. I'd love for him to be part of this." And let him sit, or her. Let that person sit in with you and experience what it means to go through the emotions of counseling. Because a lot of people they think like, "Oh, I can do that. I can do that. I can counsel just fine." And then they sit through a session, and they realize, "Oh, people are really unreasonable." People look at a situation and they say, I hate my husband and I don't care what you have to say. I'm going to go live with this man that I love. And you have to sit there as a pastor and say, okay, how do we move you out of that particular mindset and back into this marriage that you committed to? Or from a single adult, I'm living with my boyfriend and we have sex all the time. And you know what? This is the first time anyone's loved me like that. You're not going to get me to stop. Okay. How can we move you out of that mindset to understand Christ's love for you? And maybe you don't. I mean, maybe it doesn't work. But experiencing that is very different than thinking about it, right? And that's what you're allowing people to do. Give someone a tough assignment and a low-impact scenario. When I say low-impact, I mean if they do a terrible job, it doesn't have a big splash effect, right? Give them a tough assignment and a low-impact scenario where they can fail, and it's okay. Like, hey, man, good try. Awful result, but good try. You know, don't set them up in front of your class and say, teach. That's a high-impact situation. If you're not confident that they're going to get, if you feel like they're going to get up and say, you know what, I've been reading this week, and I really don't think that hell exists, then you as a teacher are going to have to stand up and say, thank you, that was great. Why don't you sit down? I'm going to finish the lesson for the day. Give them in a low-impact scenario, something that you have authority over, and you know this is not going to be awful if this goes awry. But I want this person to experience a tough assignment that they do from start to finish. Right? Think about those things that you can do. Most people, especially young adults, are afraid to lead because they're afraid to be imperfect. This is what I see as one of the most difficult challenges we have with young adults in particular, getting them into leadership. Young adults are so terrified of awkward situations that they will not do anything rather than risk being awkward. Right? That's why when a guy and a girl are flirting and texting and the girl's not sure she really wants to hang out with the guy and then he says, hey, you want to hang out? She suddenly pretends like he doesn't exist. Because it's easier to not reply to that text than it is to tell the guy, actually, I'm not really sure where we are and how I feel about this. That awkward situation causes people to just ghost. And you know what? They will ghost on you, too. They will ghost your church, right? There's a verb for that. Now, there's something wrong with the world, and we have to come up with a verb for what it means to do that. But ghosting is when, like, you're having a conversation, and then you ask the person something, and then they never respond, and you never see them ever again. Right? And you laugh, and yet my wife did that to several guys that hit on her in the early days that I knew her before we started dating. And it's a common technique with young adults. On a more sobering note, I went to a conference on the hookup culture in college, and they have done interviews with young ladies in college who slept with young men that they did not want to sleep with because it would have been more awkward to tell him no in that public situation. They thought it would be more socially uncomfortable for me to tell him no in this public situation than for me to just do it. It gets to that point. That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing, especially with young adults, we're dealing with a generation of people who just, they avoid awkwardness like the plague. And so if you tell them, hey, I want you to go teach today, and they think they're not going to do a great job, they think that maybe somebody somewhere in outer Slobobia is going to hear their lesson and think, well, that wasn't a very good lesson, then they won't do it. And it's your job as a leader to help them feel comfortable in that. So what I do sometimes, I have all of the lessons that I've taught since a decade ago when I first started leading small groups. And I go back and I look at those lessons and I'm embarrassed of them, honestly. I would never teach a lesson that way again. It's not that they were wrong or heretical or anything like that. It's just not the standard that I hold myself to anymore. After a decade of teaching, I hold myself to a little bit higher standard than I did on day one. But sometimes it's helpful to say, hey, you see me teaching with a decade of experience. You are not going to stand up on day one and feel that comfortable and be that fluid up on stage. Let me show you. Here is me at the beginning. Here's my outline. Right. It was a 30-minute lesson. I was so nervous. I got through it in 10 minutes, and then we just kind of looked at each other for the next 20, and that was awesome. You know, let your hair down around people. It can be really easy when you begin to train somebody to Yeah, I'm the goal. When you reach where I am, then man, you're going to have it really down. And never to let them see that you are anything less than that, because you're calling them up to this high calling. Well, if you show them that when I started, I was not any better than where you are right now. This is where things start. Right? When I first hit the golf course, I did not break 100 by a long shot, because it was my first time out there. And I still barely break 100 today, but that's what happens when you only play twice a year. The point is, when you start out, you're not going to be great. But this is what I call the Disney effect. I have these little terms that I coined. If you grew up in the 90s, the Disney Channel put out all of these made-for-TV movies. And in every one of them, the main character had some sort of talent that they were just so good at that once they discovered that, people just wanted to throw money at them or make them famous or whatever. My favorite, Ice Princess, that's what it was called. It was about a girl who was really good at physics and wanted to figure skate and realized figure skating is just a big physics problem. Like, I can measure torque and force, and then she's doing like quadruple axels the next day because she's just so talented at this. That is a lie from the pit of hell. You are not so good at something that the moment you do it the first time, everyone's just going to bow down and say, best I've ever seen. Nobody experiences that. And yet somehow we all think we're going to experience that. That if this isn't what I'm amazing at, I don't need to be doing it. That's what you're dealing with when you're trying to train leaders, and you have to let them see. There's a entry-level point, and we all start there, and it will be a process to climb up and to get to where you want to be. But guess what? We can do that together. I will help you through that, and eventually you'll get better. So, pick a few people and invest in them regularly in these ways. Then, push people beyond their perceived limits. This is the hardest thing to do, to get people to do things that are tougher than what they think they can handle. Bill Hybels, who's the senior pastor at Willow Creek Community Church up in Chicago, and runs this amazing, the Willowship Leadership Conference, I think is telecasted into 60 or 70 countries with millions of people participating every year, and he's the one who leads it. And he says there is the substandard zone, there is the comfortable zone, and there is the uncomfortable zone when it comes to leadership. You can give people jobs that are just too easy for them, like sweeping the floors when they should be teaching or something like that. And it's boring, and they won't keep doing it because it's below the level of where they already are. And then there's the comfortable zone where everyone likes to hang out. If I'm comfortable, I don't feel like I'm ever going to mess up. I'm going to be fine. I'm never going to have to worry about that awkward situation. And then there's the uncomfortable zone where you're pushing them beyond what they think they can do and sometimes beyond what they actually can do. And he says what you're shooting for is just above that comfortable zone. Right? You want them out of that comfort zone, but not so far into the uncomfortable zone that they actually can't do it. Right? You want to hit that sweet spot where they're doing something they didn't know they could do, but they actually could. And then you're pushing them to that. So push them beyond their perceived limits. Eventually, everybody's got to leave the bunny slope. But skiing is way more fun out on the real slopes. No, the bunny slope is not a real slope. It's where the little kids learn French fry pizza. And then you get out on the real slopes and you realize pizza is dumb. Pizza does not work when you're moving fast. Pizza causes you to break your knees and twist your ankles and fall over yourself. And you learn, oh, if I just like do this, then it's fine. They have to get off the bunny slope at some point. You cannot coddle your leaders in training and never give them an opportunity to get off the bunny slope. You got to throw them in the water and see if they can swim eventually. And you'll build leaders faster if you're willing to give them more than they think they can handle. Because this is true. People usually rise to the occasion. If you say, I want you to do this, and I say, I don't know that I can, and you say, I think you can, and I'm here to help if you need me to, but I really want you to take charge of this, and I want you to work this through. It has been my experience that usually they'll figure out a way. And it may not be perfect, and it may not be completely pretty how they got from point A to point B, but they will usually rise to the occasion. And of course, I'm in the background like, did I give them too much? Is this okay? And I'm sweating it, and then they do it, and I go, okay, that was awesome. Now guess what? You did that. time to move a little step forward, and we're going to work on how to do that better. Don't set people up to fail, but let them feel like failure is a possibility. Take the safety net away eventually. You're not putting them in a situation where there's no possibility of success for them. That's ridiculous. And there's movies where people do that. I don't understand why people find that inspirational. Like, I put you in this situation, I knew you would fail, but I wanted you to feel failure. I don't think that that's a good way to train leaders. But if you never let them think that it's possible that they might fail, then they never will solidify that threshold of, this is what I'm responsible for, this is the expectation set of me, and there will be fallout if I don't rise to the occasion in this situation. They perform better when they know the safety net is gone. And ultimately, this is the older people will appreciate this better. Raise your leaders like you would raise your kids. You don't want them to come move back in with you, right? When you send them off into the world, the goal is that they don't come back. That's what you want with your leaders. You want to train leaders in such a way that when you send them out to take charge, they're not coming back saying, yeah, it didn't really work out. I wasn't ready. Right? So your goal is to raise them like you would raise your kids. And here, this is a graph that my dad is an engineer, and so when I was 18, he explained his parenting philosophy to me so that I would know whether I was where he thought I should be. So he drew this graph for me, and he said, look, when you, this is age, and this is reliance on parents, right? And when you are born, that reliance is maximal, right? You are completely dependent on your parent. And he said, I have tried to raise you so that by age 18, your reliance on us is basically nothing. Maybe a little bit of financial reliance for school and stuff like that. But your emotional reliance on us and your need to fall back on us in every situation is as minimal as it possibly could be. Now, as an 18-year-old kid, you're like, thanks, Dad. Does this mean, like, I'm done? Shut me. He meant it with love. But this principle is really good with your leaders, too. When they start out, like, they're totally dependent on you. They have no idea what they're doing. And they're totally dependent on you to explain to them what it is they need to be doing. By the time that you've been together for a while, they should feel really comfortable when you're not around. They should feel completely comfortable. If you were to get sick, I got it. I'll just pick it right up. I'll get there early. I'll set things up. I'll make sure it's all ready to go. And you can call them at the end of the night and they say, yeah, it went great. Everything worked out just fine. That's the goal, right? And the problem is when you do it like this and they hit that point and then they boomerang back on you. Right? That's what you're trying to avoid. So the best way to do that is to push them beyond their perceived limits to help them understand their true potential that God has given them. And then finally, create this pattern of multiplication. If you have to train all the leaders, then you are what's holding your organization back. That's not mine, that's Craig Groeschel. But that is an amazing point that he made, that somebody taught him actually. If you have to train all the leaders, then your ability is the glass ceiling of what your organization can accomplish. Because nobody will ever be better than you. But there are people who could be better than you. Or there are people who could be on par with you. Or there are people who might be better at training leaders than you are. That you never know unless you give it over to them and teach them that whatever you did with them, they're to do with other people. Train leaders in such a way that your leaders can train leaders. That's why I have nothing against leadership training seminars, like once a quarter and all that kind of stuff. But if your leaders think that in order to train other leaders, they have to be able not only to pass on information, but to organize a lunch and get a whole bunch of people together and make all these phone calls, if that's what they think leadership training is, you're not creating an atmosphere of multiplication. And so, yeah, you might be able to train a leader that then helps start a new life Bible study. But then that life Bible study is going to just stay there, and it's up to you to train the next leader to start the next life Bible study. Whereas if you train this person to train other people, then you can go on and train somebody else, and they go on and train somebody else, and your organization flourishes at twice the rate. Train leaders in such a way that your leaders can train leaders. And get your ego out of the way. You're not the savior of your organization. If you're a class director, this is the biggest challenge you face in leadership. Not every director, but in general, it's that top-level person who loves control. They like control over the situation. I'm the director. Everybody is beneath me. I run this thing. That's ego, and you have to get that out of the way because you're not the savior of your organization. Jesus saved your organization, right? You're there to help. You're there to do what he's empowered you to do. And, by the way, you will die someday, and if you have not created a leader who can take your place and multiply leaders after them, then the organization literally dies with you, right? Or if you're in young adult ministry, I know this about myself. There's going to be a point where I'm not relevant to young adult ministry anymore. My job will be to minister to older people or to minister to pastors or something like that, right? My job will change. And if I haven't prepared somebody to take my spot, then everything I built crumbles. Right? This happens all the time. I mean, I look at it, David Jeremiah is amazing. He's also 80. And he has an entire broadcast ministry that when he dies, who knows what's, I mean, hundreds of employees, when he dies, what happens to that? As far as I know, as far as I can tell, there is nobody waiting in the wings to be the next person to take on his broadcast ministry. Maybe there's somebody there to take on his church, but he's built this whole thing that is on him. Now, that's not derogatory toward him, it's just an example. He's built this thing up, and when he dies, who knows what happens to it? Don't let that be the case in your life Bible study, right? If you're leading a singles group and you get married and you move on to the married group, don't make that be the end of your life Bible study because nobody else in that group knows what to do. And finally, never retire from leadership training, right? You might change jobs. You're never done. You're done when Jesus says you're done. Right, the way that I view the Christian life, I'm a baseball fan, and if you know anything about pitchers in baseball in particular, the starter is going to get out and he's going to pitch about 100 pitches. Generally speaking, he's going to pitch about 100 pitches if he's good. And then at some point, the coach is going to say, "You're done, time for a closer to come in, time for the next guy to come in." And that pitcher is going to sit down and say, "Did I do a good job or did I not do a good job? Did I do what I was supposed to do today, or did I fail to do that? Did I get yanked out early? Did I pitch 120 pitches and most of them were balls? How did that go?" The Christian life is a lot like that, right? The average lifespan is 72 years in America. That's life expectancy for an average American. You may make it there, you may make it past there, you may not make it there. Your job as a Christian is to hurl the ball downfield until Jesus says, "All right, you're done, next person in." That's your job. So don't ever think that because you're 55 and you've got a nice retirement account that it's time to go collect shells on the beach and be done. No, your job may change, but you should always be training leaders. If you're a leader, you should always be training leaders. So that is, in my opinion, based on my reading, and I've got a little bibliography on the back, I'm just trying to distill down a lot of the ideas that a lot of different leaders have put and combine it with my experience. If you do this, you will find yourself more successful in leadership training. You will find that the leaders you train have more stamina, and your organization as a whole will be healthier because everybody's got relationships with one another based on this training, right? And you are pouring into people, and it's one of the most satisfying experiences that you can possibly have. So, how do you make a wise investment and create the leaders you wish you already had? Well, it begins with you initiating a relationship that will ultimately lead to that person initiating more relationships on down the line. It's work. It is a lot of work. But it's worth it. Any questions or comments about this?
What happens if you devote a lot of time and energy in a person and they disappoint or they just kind of throw in the towel and
yeah,
they leave later?
That's life, man. I mean, ultimately, the truth is you don't know what's going to happen down the road. if you let fear of that potential keep you from investing in somebody, then you're never going to invest in anybody ultimately. Because if you don't have that fear, it means they already know everything that you're trying to tell them anyway. Right? Because you're confident that they won't flake out on you. By the way, young adults, we're flakes. We are. I'm sorry. I'll own it for my whole generation. Right? We start really gung-ho. We have great ideology. But man, when the new Captain America movie comes out and we're supposed to meet, you're getting bumped down in the ranks for most people. I mean, it's just the facts. So that fear can't stop you. It happens sometimes. It happened to Paul, right? He took Mark along. He and Barnabas took Mark along early on in their missionary journeys. They got to a particular point, and Mark said, "Hey, I'm done. I'm going back to Jerusalem." And that ultimately caused a split between Paul and Barnabas. They had to go separate ways over Mark. Right? But that was one of those points. You read the end of most of Paul's letters, and these guys that he had been pouring into, he's like, well, he left. He loves the world, so he left. He had too much of an ego, so he left, and I'm here all alone. And that's just what happens sometimes. Your job is not to predict the rate of success or the probability of success. It's to start pouring into that person. Because you never know. They may flake out on you, and then 10 years later, be able to take what you taught them, and when they do come back, say, hey, this is where I am, and I think I can help. And that discipleship that you poured into them is going to pay dividends later. You don't know. So your job as a leader is to do it. Right? Be wise. Like, if somebody has a history of flaking out, mentoring might be the better thing for them right now. Just like if somebody has a sin problem, mentoring might be the better thing. Before I start developing you as a leader, we got to get you on the right track spiritually. But if they're showing the signs that they could serve, and you target them and say, I think you've got this ability, and it doesn't work out, it's not time wasted. It just move on to the next person.
Question. Can you give us an example?
What's up? Go ahead.
No, go for it.
Go for it.
Yeah. Can you give us an example of a tough assignment in a low impact scenario?
When I was trying to develop somebody to help me with media, I asked them to make our announcement sheet for Sunday morning, and I said, I gave them freedom. You design this, right? Here's the announcements. You make this look good. If the announcement sheet doesn't get handed out that Sunday, I can write announcements on the board. Right? So that's low impact. Okay. If they fail, I just write it up on the board, and we'll just say, printer wasn't working this Sunday. Right? But that was one of those things where it's, I want to see if you can develop graphics for what we're doing. So here, just design our announcement sheet. Right? And I'm giving you full reign over it. If you don't come through, that's going to tell me something about you, either your character or your ability, right? And we'll work on whatever that is.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you had a question?
Just a comment. I think a lot of people don't know what is the pathway to say, how do I onboard someone into a place of leadership? Because I don't know their giftings. I don't know what is their personality, etc. And one of the benefits our church has is we have our place assessment, which takes someone through all of that. And so I would recommend everyone here, if you are looking for leaders in your class, and if you're not taking advantage of place, you're doing yourself a huge disservice, because we already have everything set up where they can take the assessment for free, which we pay for. You can even have someone on staff go with you, do the profile, and say, hey, this person will be a great teacher, or hey, this person is not going to be a great teacher, and here's why. And so I would just suggest, if y'all don't know what place is, that you take it first yourself, and then look to implement place in your class so that people know, hey, these are my gifts, now they're empowered, but B, here's how I need to sharpen that gift. And, oh, that's not my gift. Doesn't mean I'm not called to obedience if God calls me there, but I'm not going to enlist person A when he's a teacher for an administrative role and vice versa, right? So
yeah.
I think a lot of churches may not have that, but our church does, and I would recommend that everyone take advantage of that tool.
Yeah, if you have tools like that, it's a great starting point. Mm-hmm. It's good to realize that just because somebody doesn't test well doesn't mean they couldn't grow in that area, but maybe you start them in an area that they're good at. The other thing is that people can be really ideological when they take tests, and they're like, well, I want to like this, and I want to be good at that,
yeah.
And you get skewed results, right? We all know, based on the most recent election, that polls are not always the best way to know what an outcome is going to be. But it's certainly a tool to begin with to help you at least have a bit of a clearer picture. Some people may be a little ideological, and you say, hey, man, you tested well for this. Let's get you started. And they're just bombing it. And you go, so, like, do you actually have skills there, or do you wish that you had skills there? Because I can test really high on guitar playing, but you stick me on the stage, and you're going to find out real quick. That's an ideology, not an actuality. So, yeah, but if you have those things, definitely take advantage of them. Any other questions or comments? All right. Well, who wants a yellow headband? Because I'm done with it. I had my fun with it. And I'd like to give it away. All right, so you also get a gift card. So I don't know exactly what you do with this. I know you put your name and phone number on it, and there's a place you turn it in somewhere that you get a gift card. There wasn't a sheet that came with it that told me. So anyway, you get something, definitely. I just don't know what, and it'll be a nice surprise. See, if you volunteer for things, sometimes you get more than you bargain for. All right. Well, I tell you what, let me pray for y'all then, and we're only about 4 minutes early, so y'all have an extra time to go get some water or coffee or something. Father, thank you so much for the opportunity we have as leaders, as ministers, as members of your body to serve, to lead, to reach out to others. Thank you that you go with us in all of our efforts and that we don't have to rely on our strength alone to do this. We know that you empowered us to do what we do, and you will empower us to pass on the ability to do what we do. I pray that it would be the desire of everyone in this room not only to continually build leaders, but to do it all of their lives. Lord, this would be something we never tire of. Despite the inevitable disappointments that come with it, despite sometimes the backstabbing and the betrayal that can come with it, Father, that it is a worthy endeavor, and that we glorify you in doing it by replicating what you have given us in others, just as your Son replicates himself in us. I pray that you'll bless the rest of their night, give them energy, give them the ability to stay awake, and bless us as we go forward. It's in your Son's name I pray. Amen.
Amen.
If you did not sign in, make sure you sign in on the roll sheet back there, and then have fun at your next class. I didn't get to meet you coming in. Jason?
Jason.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if y'all want it, but if you ever need to email me with a question, I don't even know how to spell my own name.